The following podcast discusses sensitive topics related to death, loss, and grief, which may be triggering for some listeners. If you find these subjects difficult, please take care of yourself and feel free to pause or skip this episode. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, and welcome to the final episode of Parsons Perspective Podcast. I'm Donna, and today we're going to be wrapping up this incredible series with a very special episode. So over the past few weeks, we've had the opportunity to explore so many different aspects of death, grief, and how we navigate those difficult but important conversations about end-of-life planning. For this final episode, we'll be focusing on the importance of talking with your family about your final wishes or asking them about theirs. These are often very uncomfortable conversations to have, but they're absolutely necessary for ensuring that your wishes and those of your loved ones are honoured when the time comes. Instead of our usual format, today I'll be playing four separate conversations that I've had with some well-known members of the Cardiff wider communities. That'll be Gaynor Legal, Faith Walker, Jenny Lenny, and the wonderful Liana Hardinia, aka Shirley Classy. Each of them shared with me their thoughts and experiences on talking with their families about final wishes and the importance of opening up about this dialogue. So let's get started with my first conversation. In this first recording, I sat down with Gaynor Legal. She's a respected figure in the Cardiff community. We talked about her journey to finally bringing up her final wishes with her family and what made her decide it was time to start the conversation. First of all, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Gaynor Legal. So I've been knocking around this world for some time now. In my younger days, political activist, local councillor, TV appearances, working in the voluntary sector, mostly about trying to get the statutory services to respond adequately to the needs of the black and minority ethnic communities in Wales.
And that's how we met, wasn't we? I was working for Diverse Cymru.
Correct.
And you was on the board.
Correct.
And then our kids become friends and all this kind of stuff. But, so, what I'm asking people like yourself is what your thoughts are. What do you think is the trigger or the problem that is, you know, why people don't really, what I'm calling, get their ducks in a row, firstly? Because back in the day, you'd have that. My nan, she had a suitcase with her clothes underneath her bed. What she going to wear to her funeral? She had the funeral paid for. But recent generations, they seem to shy away from even discussing, oh, I'm dying or I might be dying.
I don't know. And it's difficult not to generalise because some people do plan. Not so much the clothes because that's old school now, you know. When I was little, we actually laid the bodies out in the house. Now people die and their bodies are whisked away.
Mm.
That's one thing. The other bit is, I think because there's a gap in generations, so not many families have old people living with them.
Mm.
So there is a gap between getting old and dying.
Yes.
And a lack of understanding.
Yeah.
And that preparation that goes along with understanding. So my view is that the modern way of living has distanced us from death. I'll tell you a very quick anecdote. I was involved in some training which is about fostering, and it was about kids that have been sexually abused, working with those children, and about you listening to the children. And one of the presenters started to talk about using colours, and a lot of the colours were black and blue and stuff. So I said to her, all your dark colours have negative connotations. What if you're working with a black child? You're making their blackness be a negative thing.
Mm.
And she said, oh, I've never thought of that. And I said, it's about, you know, being positive. And I said, because black is associated with death, with evil and stuff.
Mm.
And she said, oh, are you talking about introducing death? And I said, well, death is a part of life. She said, that's novel. Mm. Well, I thought, no, it isn't. Now, perhaps, but not before.
Yeah, yeah.
So that whole concept of the cycle of life, you know, we live, we die, has just been broken, fragmented.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I grew up in a family where the child was born, you took out a penny insurance. You know, worthless now. My mother died at 87 and she had £32.
No. But,
yeah, but, you know, but it was about insurance. Children died young.
Yes.
The expectations of...
Yes.
Yeah. And that is gone as well.
Mm.
So the preparation, the need to prepare, because there was no welfare state, etc., that is gone as well. But if I had a penny for every will I've written, I'd be quite wealthy.
I love that.
It's the way you introduce those preparations.
Yeah.
But we don't... How many people spend time with old people nowadays?
It's true. I remember growing up and I'd be told when I go to Bristol and see my nan, they're like, they talk about when someone dies, we have to cross over the body a few times or walk around the body. And that used to frighten me, thinking, oh my God, I hope none of you ever die, because I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And you'd be frightened into thinking, you know, certain things I'm going to have to do. But truth is, there's no have to do anything, is there? You don't have to do anything.
No, and the other truth is, families have their own rituals and superstitions. You ask where they come from, nobody can remember, you know? And so you grow up thinking that's the norm, and it's just your family.
Yeah.
So you know, the whole... One of the things that I'm really pleased with in Duke Town, in Tiger Bay, there's a funeral today, and everybody who knows you turns up. She left a note to say, thank you for my haters for turning up. You know, you get a good send-off, because that is part of the process.
Mm.
And you celebrate the life.
Yeah.
It's not a moaning and groaning.
And that's what people need to bring back as well.
Well, they do. And they also need to be back... I mean, when I was little... the women greeted, they cried and wailed.
Mm.
Some religions, that still goes on, you know, the ritual of crying out loud and showing your anguish.
Releasing the grief, if
but
you can.
It releases it.
Yeah.
And it lets people understand what is going on.
And people don't do that anymore, do they?
No. Death has become a very private, commercialised part of life. That only affects you now and then, and the rest of your life you don't think about it.
And is that your advice to people, to leave it, or do you think people should get their ducks in a row still?
No, I think you should organise it. I say, oh, I like that tune, I'm gonna have it played at my tune.
And how many times have you changed that song?
Oh, you know, but I'm gonna write it down so my kids know what to do.
That's amazing. That is the important part, isn't it?
Yeah. Share it so they're not frightened of dying.
Yeah.
That's important.
And again, you can celebrate someone's life before they go.
I'd love to do that, you know. It's just the money, isn't it?
Oh, thank you, Gaynor, for speaking with me. Brilliant. That was such a thoughtful conversation with Gaynor, and I hope that her openness about having those difficult talks with family members resonated with you as much as it did with me. Now, let's move on to my second guest. Next up is Faith Walker, who shared with me how her experiences of loss has shaped her views on discussing her final wishes with her loved ones. Faith was very candid about the challenges she's faced about approaching these conversations, but also the relief that she has felt afterwards. Ryan? So I'm talking with Faith Walker. Hi, Faith. So the funny thing is, whoever's listening to this podcast will won't understand that I just bumped into her and I said, Faith, I got to talk to you about this, because this is one lady who has done a lot of work in the Afro-Caribbean community, and you talk to a lot of people. Yeah?
Yeah.
She's still in shock.
I'm still in shock. I am completely in shock.
Right.
I didn't know I was going to be part of a podcast.
You didn't. Right. I'm all excited, but I'm going to make you not sad now, but the topic of what I want to ask you, right, is just one question, which might open up a conversation, Faith, right? So the question I want to ask you is, why, in your opinion and experience of, you know, working in the community, your radio, all the stuff you've done with charity, why do you think, in your opinion, working with the Afro-Caribbean community, are there a lot of resilience of people putting all their ducks in a row when it comes to death, dying and funerals? And again, this is just, when I say ducks in a row, I mean funeral planning, talking to your family, getting the word out there. And before you mention anything, years ago people did. My nan had underneath her bed, she had a suitcase with a funeral dress in. The funeral's paid for. We didn't have to worry about a thing. Moving forward, nobody's coming through and planning and talking. So this episode is called Getting Your Ducks in a Row.
Right.
Yeah, so what's your thoughts straight away with that thought?
I don't know if it is an issue, I don't think. I don't know. I think people, like for our elders, like you said, that was some always planned and knew exactly what they wanted. I think maybe, I don't know. I don't know that question. I don't know how to answer it. I can talk for myself.
Have you got all your ducks in a row?
Mostly.
Yeah?
Yeah, mostly.
So what about your friends and family?
I don't know. I don't know because it's not a conversation.
See, the thing
I
is,
will have.
And you've grown up like me, kind of in an area like more white dominated, Valleys, so you can have the accent, yeah?
Yeah.
And our accents get stronger when we talk together.
Yeah.
The point is, we're obviously surrounded by different types of communities, different type of people. So when we come to Cardiff and we see what's going on here and people don't talk, they don't engage, they don't. Well, people support, but they don't literally. Some of them seem like they don't care.
I think the difference is now from where our elders is. They had a stronger sense of community, maybe, and so when we had the community, it's like if somebody in my community passed away, we have 12 nights or 9 nights. Sorry, we have 9 nights. Mm-hmm. Then all the community come together. We all cook
for those 9 nights.
Yeah, for them 9 nights.
Somebody passes on day 1 or day 0.
And the zero, everybody would come. This is me in Port Talbot with the Caribbean community now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they will come to the person who's passed, you know, and then from there for 9 nights, there will be like a celebration.
Back to the same house?
Back to the same house.
People will come for 9 nights.
Yeah, come to the 9 nights.
Bring in food,
talk, reminisce.
Of the person that's passed.
Music. Mm. It'd be a celebration.
For nine nights. And then there's the funeral. Because I've heard about the 9 night. Yeah, I'm going for someone's 9 night. I'm going to London for a 9 night.
So that's what it was. And that's what our people celebrate. So this generation now, we haven't come to that time of passing. We're still in that. We might have the time with somebody of our age, I'm saying like 50 plus, you know, might die suddenly.
Mm.
But it's not that sense of community anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's not that sense of community. They might live isolated somewhere. So, like I said, there's not that sense of community. And then if somebody's passed between the 50s and 60s, their child will only be like 30s, 20s. Mm.
Yeah.
So they'd be more modern then, in a sense.
Yeah.
And how do they prepare for their loved ones being passed?
Yeah.
Unless their parents have spoken to them about it.
But we live in the day they didn't used to talk about it, did they?
In the day they didn't talk about it, but they had a sense of belonging.
Right, okay.
It was a custom, it was 9 nights.
You knew that auntie would sort this out, and everything, the elders.
Yeah, the elders were sorted out. Now we are a different generation and time.
Right.
So I don't know.
And if you're not connected to a community or connected to a church or connected to like an area full of people who understand, you know, your traditions or any traditions, like I grew up where there was nobody like us, how are you going to have that conversation, innit? My father used to talk about funerals. Oh, you'll know when there's a Jamaican funeral, you'll hear the drums and you'll hear the people singing. I've never seen it, Faith. I've never seen it.
Never.
I've been to a Caribbean funeral, but I've never seen the celebration. I've never heard the loud drums. I've never heard. It's all been different here in Cardiff. Everybody seemed to be looking and watching. Who's the important ones? Who's the less important ones? Who sits at the front? Who sits further back? It's loads of what I see as a funeral worker, stuff that doesn't matter. And they're forgetting the person who's passed is all. I just don't know. I'm putting this together just to try and work up people's opinions. And what do you think about? I mean, I got all my ducks in a row. My father didn't. My mother didn't. My father never spoke about dying because he reckons he's going to bring it on. Mm. You can't talk about death because I'm going to die tomorrow.
Yeah.
Those sort of like fears. Can't talk about dying, Don, because you're going to. What do they say? You're tempting fate.
Yeah.
So it's a hard one. Like even if you say, "Oh, Dad, you know, what do you think? What do you mean? Why do you want me to die? Do you?" It goes like that. So asking your family to put your ducks in a row or asking, "Oh, Dad, have you got everything sorted?" it changes to what we mean, like negative, where it really should be, you're leaving people like a positive thing, because, you know, if your deck's not on a roll, if you haven't planned it, you haven't said. Because if my husband didn't tell me that he wants to get buried in Zimbabwe, he'd be up in Western Cemetery, done, and probably turning in his grave.
Yeah, because my family know that I won the humanistic, you know, so it's not going to be...
You've had those conversations.
I've had those conversations, you know.
Do you think it's important?
First, yeah, it's very important, because first I was going to leave my body to medical science, and they're like, oh, you can't do that, where are we going to go to mourn and grieve? And I was like, well... You have me, you have my spirit of me, you know. So they say, oh, but the grandchildren know that, oh, we're gonna, you're going to be buried, like, in some field, and you are there, you know, in the woods or whatever.
Yeah,
you
know.
So they know me, and my family know me.
What you
they
want.
Know what I want.
Do you think it brings you comfort knowing that I know where my final resting place may be, or it's going to be done the way that I want? Do you think it gives you, even though you're not thinking about dying right now, I hope you're not, I'm just saying this... When people avoid having their end of life planned, it's to me it leaves things open, where people got to kind of think, oh, mum liked this, so I'll get her that. My father would have hated his funeral. Oh my goodness me, he used to say to me, Dawn, when I died, just put me on the ash cart. Yeah, he had horse and carriage. He would have hated it every single minute of his funeral. He would have hated it, but we did it because of what? Showy. We know our dad was good, so we got to show everybody.
No, my family knows I'm not a showy person.
Good.
They know no horse and cart. They know. Not to wear black.
Yeah.
You know, they know all things like that. Like my mum's end of life care. So I had to get all that in place for her. My mum's a traditionalist, so we would have to wear, because I said, I'm going to wear white to mum's funeral.
I want people to wear black at mine, I'm not going to lie.
And then my daughter said, mum, Nana's a traditionist, you know what I mean? You'd have to wear
whatever she wants.
And Nan needs to wear black. But my mum is very spiritual.
Though. Yeah.
Immensely spiritual. So
a lot of people get funeral guilt. Do you know, like, when they have another conversation? Yeah, like even though my father would have hated his funeral, I laugh because I thought, you know, he'll come and he'll laugh and all, Don, why did you do that? I'm very spiritual. Some people don't have that sort of faith, in a sense. And so, do you think the funeral guilt of, was it right? Was it okay? Was it whatever? All of that. A lot of people from the community have it as well, because it's always the after talk of, oh, the food was this, or so-and-so didn't turn up, or so-and-so. But you're in that bubble, right? You're grieving for your mum or your dad, and you don't care who's there or whatever, but afterwards. So do you reckon having all your ducks in a row can stop your family, after you pass, having that pain and guilt or sorrow or even, I don't know. What do you reckon?
I don't know.
You haven't thought about it?
I haven't thought about how others would feel about that situation. I always think they have to own it.
Ah.
You know, you have to celebrate your living.
Right.
And not celebrate the death.
Right.
You know, it's about a celebration. So if I think sometimes when people grieve, they grieve about the loss of connection they had when they were living.
Yes.
So some people might be remembering, oh, I wish I had more time with A or B. You know, so they're grieving for that, of the lost time not spent.
Yeah.
So I think people need to own what their beliefs are, you know.
Own their beliefs.
And to celebrate that life when they're still alive.
Give them flowers while they're still alive.
Yeah.
Give them flowers when they're still here. Give them love.
Hugs.
Give them care.
Tell them what you feel about them. Tell them that you love them. Tell them what you respect about them. Tell them what they've done for you or what you've done for them. You tell them that when they are living, not wait until they pass, because they can't hear you. Yeah, they'd be in the spirit realm.
If you've got faith,
I believe in that.
Yeah.
And I believe in my ancestors.
Which we're lucky that we do, because some people don't have
but
none
some
of that.
Some people have that. So the question, going back to your question, I don't know about people's guilt. I don't know. I don't know about the wider community, about what they say. I'm not... I go to funerals to people that I love and respect. And they most probably knew how I felt when they were alive.
Yes.
Not where you're from when they died, in the after realm. So maybe this question's wasted on me.
No, it's not. No, this conversation is we open up the dialogue. So that's the whole point, is having all these different types of opinions and wondering why, because you're probably going to take this question later and thinking, oh, yeah. So it was a random question Donna gave me today. But it's just opening up that dialogue, having that conversation. And I think it's a gift. I think being able to talk to your family and friends about your end of life, I think it's giving them a gift and it's helping you as well. I'm not putting that on people. I'm just saying that I've seen so many people in my office asking me, what should I do, cremate or bury my mum?
Because I know my mum be buried.
Yeah.
I knew my dad to be buried.
Yes.
I knew my father not to have a casket.
Yes.
You know, my father didn't want to come in the house.
Mm.
So, my father spoke to us about it.
Yeah.
You know, my father was open about the do's and don'ts when he passes, you know. And
do you feel that was a good thing? Well. That was a good thing. Otherwise, you would be. Do you feel it was a good thing, or do you feel you would have been left with questions, or would you just used your own intuition? Exactly. But
he did,
and you think that was a good thing?
Yeah, it was a good thing because he said to me.
So he got all his ducks in a row, then, did he?
Yeah, but I was just convincing my brothers and sisters because that's what his wishes were.
Yeah,
because I had that conversation with him.
That's where the dialogue continues, then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So families. Families is a big thing with it, isn't it? Thank you so much, Faith.
It's okay. You're so welcome.
This conversation, I'm literally going and talking to as many people as I can to just try and talk about different bits and bobs within it. And getting the ducks in a row is this episode. And thank you.
Thank you.
You've made a lot
thank
of sense.
Thank you for speaking to me.
Seeing you, I was excited.
to Faith, have this conversation.
Faith Walker, my God. Thank you so much, my darling. Faith's words there were very powerful, and they give us a reminder that although those discussions are very difficult to have, they can bring peace of mind, not just for ourselves, but for our families. It's never easy, but having clarity about final wishes can actually really help when the time comes. So let's move on to our next conversation. I caught up with the very, very, very busy Jane Lenny. Jane has always been a very connected member of her community, and she shared with me her experiences of asking her own family about their final wishes. Her approach was a bit different, and I think that you'll find her perspective really interesting. Now, Jane's a very busy lady, like I said, and you will hear a lot of background noise because I caught her in the middle of Cardiff City Centre while she was on her way to work. You'll hear drilling and phones going and everything. But like I said, what she has to say is very interesting. So even though it's difficult to listen to, I hope you enjoy it. You know, people from the Afro-Caribbean community, there's a block sometimes in talking about, like, death or dying or, you know, things like that. What, in your opinion, you know, is the trigger for that? Why do people not have those conversations?
I just think it's just Caribbean people on the whole. We don't tend to talk about death. They don't tend to talk about illness. If somebody's ill in their family, people don't want to discuss it, and then all of a sudden you've heard that person have died and you think, oh, I didn't know they were.
Yeah.
In when you're talking about hospital settings, people trying to shut down and don't want people to visit families because they don't want people to see. But I suppose it was different when I was, when it was my mother, because I wanted people to see her. So they can understand, really, that this was the woman who they used to see sitting on the porch. She's had a stroke. She's not well. But if she would have died, people would have understood, oh, I can understand how she's passed. Because I went to the hospital to visit her, and I could see she was deteriorating. But people don't want them to visit in a hospital. They kind of crush and shut people down and out. And I think they don't deal very well with death and they don't deal very well with illness.
So what about grieving then?
Grieving, they don't go through the channels, I feel, that they kind of keep close-knit with in their family circle. A lot of people would never go and see a bereavement officer. They wouldn't go and get counselling because they think, oh, counselling for mad people. Mm. But it's not mad people. It's dealing with your grief and how you're going to cope after that person's gone. Because it's a big thing in your life.
Yeah.
But people don't look at that. They just think counselling for mad people. I don't want people to be knowing my business and what's happened in my family. So that's why they shut down.
Fantastic. Jane, you're a star.
But that's what I believe.
It's true though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it leaves us with a lot of pain.
And you never recover from that pain.
No.
And that's what's very hard. I recovered from my pain and dealt with my pain because I looked after my mother when she was bad. I always lived with my mother, but I looked after her and I nursed her for 14 years. I found the medical professions are quick to say, oh, they'll never get better. You're better off putting them in a home. And I don't believe in homes. I personally don't believe in them. If you've got nobody to care for you, but I think you flourish in your own surroundings. And I've proved that because my mother was dying how many times and she just made just a recovery.
What was your mum's funeral like?
It was vibrant. It was what I wanted for her. She was a big, big follower of Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
When she was going out, I had unforgettable because my mother was unforgettable in the community. She was the person that people seen on the porch door. She, despite she was not well, she always had a smile for people and always had time to talk to people. And that's what people remember. Even the kids growing up, the kids who are now in their 40s, because I brought up my two nieces, they say, oh, Mrs. Lenny, we used to love going to Mrs. Lenny's house. She used to cook. She'd invite us all in. She never put the door in our face. Coming from school, you know, they say, oh, they're having their tea, come back later. Not my mother. Come one, come all. Yeah. You know, she'd have them in. And those children are big people and they still remember that. So it's the memories you have surrounding that person.
Yeah.
And it's not good to shut down and just close people out.
Did you know what your mum wanted for a funeral?
I knew what she wanted. She didn't want anything big and glam. She was never a big and glam lady. She just said, as long as I go and people remember me, it's not all about the material things. It's not all about the glam and glitz. It's about me. Put something in about me. And that's what she had. Because like, we live in Butte Town, loads of people are out doing everybody else. They want the biggest, the best funeral. But the main thing is that person.
Yeah.
It's not about what we have in a church and how many flowers, what the after party. It's about celebrating the life of that person and actually looking at what that person would want, what type of person they were. And that's what you should be bringing to the funeral, not really so much of what you would like, because it is about that person.
Yeah.
And that's what people tend to forget a lot of the time.
Oh, thank you so much, sis. Perfect. I'll see you soon, my love, right?
There you go. But it is about the person and what's not. Mm. And people just forget. And that's quite sad.
I want to give a double thank you to Jane there for taking the time to talk with me. As you can hear, she was so busy. She was on her way to work. The drills in the background, her phone going, but she still took the time to share her experiences with us. So I want to conclude this series with my last conversation, and that is with a lady named Liana Adenia. She's otherwise known as Shirley Classy. She's Cardiff's Shirley Bassey tribute singer. Very, very fabulous. If you can catch her, you can probably catch her online if you just Google her name. But today she's talking to me about something much more personal, and that is the sudden and heartbreaking loss of her young grandson, Mason. He tragically passed away from a heart attack. Shirley's story is one of shock, devastation, and navigating through grief. It's a conversation that I think many of us can learn from, especially those who've experienced a sudden loss.
I was just saying that death is an inevitability. We're dying from the day we're born, you know, it's part of the process. But when you have older parents who get to 80 or whatever, you know it's going to happen and you kind of half accept it, but not really, you know. So when it does actually happen, it is awful. But when you have, like in myself, your grandson drops dead at 21, who was perfectly healthy, he'd just come from the gym, but a heart valve didn't open or close or whichever way it was, and he just dropped dead. And my son and his ex-wife now, I mean, they idolized Mason. He was, I can show you pictures of him. He looked like a light black Adonis. I mean, he was, oh my God. And it was just devastating for the family, you know. And we've got this MASAP thing called, you know, for defibrillators and that sort of thing. But it's something that we all need to discuss, you know. And another thing is money. It's a terrible thing, isn't it, within a family. I mean, I'm lucky with my family. We haven't had any of that. But, you know, it is, death is such a sad thing.
It rocks the community as well, doesn't it?
Oh my gosh. I was brought up in the Bay, old Tiger Bay, and the community, and when there's a funeral, oh my goodness me, do they pay their respects? Excellent, wonderful, you know.
You don't see that so much anymore, though. You don't hear the drums of a big funeral happening, a procession.
Oh, we do. We have the walk. They walk the coffin up Butte Road to whatever, you know, even if they've moved out of the Bay and they're somewhere else, they'll
come back.
Say that we'll want the coffin to be walked from here or to be walked up.
So what's the importance of that, do you think?
Respect. Utter respect.
Everything stops for that person.
Yeah, on that particular day, yeah. And then St. Mary's Church is absolutely ram-jammed. And there's a guy called Darren Tyson who sings. Oh, he brings back on goose pimples
thinking about it.
And he sings, and the whole place is in tears, you know.
And then all about Bootown Community Centre then for a little bit of...
Oh, my God, a little bit, a big one. Not a little.
Oh, bless you.
Yeah, wonderful.
I would really like to thank Leanna for taking time for sharing Mason's story. Hopefully, if we do get to do another series of Parsons Perspective podcasts, we will talk about the MASAP and what's come from sharing information about sudden death and heart attack in young people like Mason's story. To our listeners, I'd like to thank you for tuning in to Parsons Perspective podcast. Sudden loss or any type of loss is something none of us can fully prepare for. But hearing stories like all of these reminds us that we don't have to face them alone. If any of these conversations have touched you and you'd like to share your own story of loss, feel free to reach out. We are here to listen. I'd like to thank you for joining me on this journey through the first series of Parsons Perspective podcast. I hope it sparked conversations in your own life, helped you feel more free and more comfortable with topics that are often hard to talk about, and given you a new perspective on death and dying. Until next time, take care, and remember, it's always the right time to talk about your final wishes. Thank you.